Grizzly One.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
It must be like Putin, that's a banking.
Minutes after the hour of 5, yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, taking you home on the drive home at 5. And as the president prepares to address the nation and both houses of our legislature in Washington, in addition to others who will be in attendance from our federal government, we will be broadcasting live tomorrow his State of the Union address, which will be hosted by Rita Cosby, and I think will be taking place at approximately about 9 o'clock. But there'll be some pre-talk in advance of the State of the Union address. We'll get to see which congressmen, congresswomen basically pitch a tent and wait, this way they're designated to be the first, second, or third who actually get to shake the president's hands. We know it won't be any Democrats, that's for sure. Because in the past, the Nebuchadnezzar Schlubby Elliot Engel of the Bronx and Westchester always used to pride himself on the fact that he was first in the queue. That will be verboten this year, as both Nancy Pelosi, minority leader of the Democrats in the House, and Chuck Schumer, minority leader of the Senate, the Democrats, would definitely be eye-fornicating and mad-dogging any Democrat who would line up in that queue. But the president says it'll be about America first. It'll be about safety, security, and obviously our economy. But meantime, there are so many clouds over this presidency. We've discussed just last week the New York Times story that said that the president wanted Mueller fired about a month after he had fired Comey, and only the intervention of White House counsel calmed him down and prevented him from triggering off what may have been a Watergate-style scenario. But there are so many other issues from a legal perspective in terms of what potentially could Mueller and his inquisitors come up with that could lead to charges that might lead to impeachment or might actually lead to other measures of censure or could lead to criminal charges. On the line to discuss that right now is Lori Levinson. She's professor of the law, the Loyola Law School. We'll get to her temporarily. And whereas everyone is focused right now on obstruction of justice, I actually believe that with obstruction of justice, it may be very difficult to convince the Republican majority, if they stay a majority after the midterm elections, to actually go in that direction. But money laundering, and I'll explain why. But first, to Lori, thanks for joining us here on the drive home at 5.
My pleasure.
Okay, so if you don't mind, Lori, if we could discuss the charge of obstruction of justice that seems to have been the flavor of a lot of the commentary and newscasts in the last week. How difficult would that be to prove, and how difficult would it be to either censure or impeach the president on that topic?
Those are the questions of the day. So assuming you could actually indict a sitting president, which is a huge question, the challenge on an obstruction charge are two. First, you have to show corrupt intent. In other words, the reason Trump has been doing all these things is because he's trying to shut down an investigation that might show his wrongdoing. Now, the challenge there is that Trump will always argue, gee, I'm just a novice. I didn't know that this isn't a conflict of interest, or I'm just trying to run the government the way that I want to as a president. It doesn't really have to do with, you know, covering up anything. I didn't collude. So that's one challenge. The second challenge is that for many obstruction charges, you need a proceeding. And we have no idea whether there was an ongoing grand jury proceeding at the time, for example, that Trump was making his hints to Comey and doing other things related to this. So then if you take it out of the criminal justice realm to the impeachment realm, there's more flexibility, but that's a political process. That's not a legal process. And that will be up to whether the Republicans are willing to say that Trump has crossed the line and tried to undermine government. This is a power struggle, and I don't think that that's likely to happen, but that will be what has to be decided.
Now, what about what would be the knee-jerk reaction that the president, knowing now, as we do from the White House counsel, that upwards of 20 members of the administration have so far been interviewed by Mueller and his associates. They have collected an incredible amount of documentation that the Trump both administration and campaign has provided to them. They don't seem to be complaints from Mueller and his staff that they're not providing information. 20,000 pages of documents from the Trump administration, 1.4 million pages from the Trump campaign. I would have to say the easiest charge probably in that would be somebody's lied to the FBI in the process, or they've perjured themselves. And this president, if depending on which route he takes, could end up facing such charges, couldn't he?
Well, I agree with you that it's always the easiest. I'm a former federal prosecutor. And frankly, the easiest charge is a false statement. It doesn't even have to be under oath, and it can be to any federal official. And we've already seen some indictments come out for false statements. That's just the natural tendency by people to see if they can lie and get away with it. But Mueller, as you said, has a lot of documentation. He also has some tapes that none of us have heard when there were the FISA warrants. In terms of whether they would bring that against the president, again, two remaining issues. Can you indict a sitting president? And when it comes to bringing impeachment charges, I think there's going to be a lot of finger pointing saying, well, you know, he was operating on false information, or presidents don't tell the truth always. And that's going to be a moment where the American public, through its representatives, have to pause and say, is it okay with us that the one person in our country who gets to lie is the head of state, the president?
Now, I remember a while back, Lori, that the New York Times had published an article about a sit-down they had with the president in which he was basically admonishing Mueller not to cross the line into his family finances. I would think at that point, if Mueller wasn't considering that, that would say to me as a prosecutor, an inquisitor, what? I shouldn't be looking at your family finances? It's off limits? I would think that all of a sudden I would have a mandate to follow up on that, because once I get started on looking at possible Russian collusion, I have to follow the trail wherever the evidence takes me. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say that remarks like that are almost bait for a prosecutor. Bob Mueller is a professional. He has done this job before and he knows how to do it. So the minute he gets a sense that somebody doesn't want him to look at something, that might be one of the first things he wants to look at. On the other hand, I think he's going to be methodical. He knows that anything he does will be under a microscope. So I think he'll have some reason, some explanation for why he goes into these other areas. And finally, I'm not sure that he needs to be honest with you. He may have enough just on the information from the other witnesses, from the campaign itself, without going into the private finances.
And I know that he has an upcoming sit-down, he and his staff, with Bannon, and obviously a hopeful sit-down with the president. How helpful could somebody like Bannon be, who's already been told by the administration, don't cooperate with the Senate investigation or any congressional investigation, just hide behind executive privilege?
I think Bannon could be phenomenally helpful. If you look at the investigation, they've been doing what we would expect. You work your way from outside in to the people closest to the target. And if the president is the target of this investigation, the person right next to him is Steve Bannon. Now, in terms of whether Bannon will cooperate, I'm not sure that these privileges he's claiming will hold up. And at that point, he will be put to the test. You either tell the truth or you lie. And if you lie, it's coming down on you. given the bad blood there seems to be between him and the president, I doubt that Bannon would want to take the fall.
And then finally, Lori, do we know at this point, out of the many people who have been interviewed, close to 20 in the administration, if either Donald Trump Jr. or Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, have been asked questions by Mueller and his crew?
We have not heard anything public about that. Now, that's good news and bad news. They might say it's good news. We haven't been questioned. But I, as a prosecutor, often think of it, it's probably bad news. If you are the target of the investigation, they talk to everybody else first. And at the end, you may or may not get a chance to give your say. So it's not necessarily helpful to be able to say they never talked to me.
Would it be safe to say, Lori, that when the actual inquisitors, the people who are doing the heavy lifting in that room with whomever is coming to talk with them, ask you a question, you would have to assume they already know the answer?
I think on maybe 80% of them, they do. I think on the other 20%, they might not. But they're charged with following the facts wherever they go. This isn't a trial yet. This really is an investigation to try to find out what happened. So I actually hope that Mueller's people are approaching it that way. They're going to do some testing based upon what they know. But beyond that, I think they're just going to try to fill in some gaps about what they don't know.
I do appreciate that. Lori Levinson, she's a professor of law at Loyola Law School. And whereas we've had two sides to the issue here, some of you who are narrowly opposed to Trump and his administration say, oh, he's guilty, guilty, guilty. The Trumpers and Trumpettes who say, oh, no, no, you know, this is all a witch hunt. This is a wild goose chase. What Lori just spoke of is all on the table. And if you understand what Mueller has to work with, 20 people that they've cross-examined, tons and tons of paperwork handed over, not denied, the special prosecutor from both the Trump campaign and the Trump administration. Got to believe that in some of those inquisitions, they're going to catch people fibbing, lying, telling white lies, embellishing the facts, and committing perjury.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
77 WABC.
JC has a front rack. The rich I ain't dumb. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me.
The Hogan man.
99 problems, but a bitch ain't one.
That's right. Jay-Z, you know, it brought such knock and such joy to me that he was up for 8 Grammy Awards. And he struck out swinging on all 8. You know, he's old school. I think he's, what, about 47 years old. Time to hang it up. A guy was in charge of Rockefeller Records, right? Rockefeller Records there for a while. That denotes that you're looking for cash money. That's your cure. By the way, if you don't mind, guys, let's play that cut in which Jay-Z was sitting with Van Jones on CNN the night before the Grammys down below us in Madison Square Garden and talked about it ain't all about the cheddar. It ain't all about the money. Cash money does not rule the world.
It's not about money at the end of the day. Money is not doesn't equate to like happiness. It doesn't. That's not missing the whole point. We treat people like human beings. And then, you know, that's the main point. You can't treat someone like. It goes back to the whole thing. You're going to treat me really bad and pay me well.
Mm. Yeah, that's
it. It's not going to lead to happiness. It's going to lead to, like, you know, again, the all same right. thing. Everyone's going to be sick.
Yeah, bull feathers. Let me tell you something. You were slinging crack in the projects in Marcy Avenue. You didn't have to do that. You were selling crack like so many other rappers because you wanted that money. You wanted things that you couldn't afford, and that was the easy way to get it. So for you, it's always been about the money. And that battle you had with a producer in which you stabbed the producer at the New York nightclub, and all of a sudden you went to anger management class. Yeah, right. What was that, Morgenthau at the time? Probably had the Cyrus White Shoes Vance disease, which is make enough contributions to me, and I'll make it go away. And let's not forget, you shot your brother right there while you were living in the Marcy Avenue projects in Williamsburg. You did a rap song about it, went platinum, and now you're rolling in dough. And what do you do now, JC? When somebody wants your music, they have to subscribe to Tidal.
for $10 a month. So there's no other way. You basically, obviously, there are illegal ways to get it. But if you want to get it stand up and legal, you got to up the ducats. So stop this fact that it's not about the money, because you live for the money. Now, your protege who beat you in Madison Square Garden in terms of being the rap artist of the year, Lamar Alexander, he also, his claim to fame is using the B word, like Jay-Z, the bitch word. Listen to him. Bitch, don't kill my vibe. But wait. We saw the appearance of Hillary Rodham Clinton. It was like a nightmare for everybody. Like, can't you just go to the Love Shack in Chappaqua and retire and stay out of our lives? No, she did a video in which, yes, she was dropping the B-bomb too, to show she's keeping it real. You know, she's hip, she's happening.
Hey, everyone, I just wanted to say thanks. Thanks for your feminism, for your activism, and all I can hope is you keep up the really important good work.
And can you say the name of the activist bitches supporting bitches?
And let me just say, this is directed to the activist bitches supporting bitches. So let's go.
This is directed to the activist bitches supporting bitches. So the sexism, the misogyny that is so common in the world of rap was on stage last night as we're dealing with the Me Too movement. And boy, we're going to drop you now, right? Your day will come. And now, the former Democratic nominee for the presidency, who won the popular vote, is dropping the B word and reading from Fire and Fury.
He had a longtime fear of being poisoned. One reason why he liked to eat at McDonald's. Nobody knew he was coming, and the food was safely pre-made.
You know, that's it. We've got it. That's the one.
In many instances,
The Grammy's in the bag.
Hillary Rodham Clinton is sort of like the Jay-Z in the rap world. He's too old to be a rapper anymore, but naturally they want to honor the Hoover man. Maybe it's time for you, Jay-Z, to also retire to one of those islands you own in the West Indies, the Caribbean, and leave it to the younger rappers like Hillary leaving presidential politics to a new generation of Democrats. A pox on both of you.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
.541 as we continue here on the Drive Home at 5. Remember, it was about 2 weeks ago. There were arrests that were made right near City Hall of City Councilman Jumaane Williams. And of Edanis Rodriguez and others. They were following the case of Ravi Ragbir, who was scheduled for deportation. He had fainted in the immigration court and was being transported to a local hospital. And apparently a judge made a decision on his fate earlier today. So we join City Councilman Jumaane Williams at this moment. Thanks for joining us on the Drive Home at 5, Jumaane.
Thanks for having me. I guess, according to you, I'm one half of Heckle and Jekyll.
Yes, Edanis Rodriguez. Let me tell you something. You guys know how to act when the cameras are on you and you're being arrested. I actually give you props for that, having been arrested 76 times myself.
Well, actually, I've done a lot of civil disobedience. This was not that. This was not planned. That was no acting. That was an overuse for nonviolent protest, but
okay.
Happy to talk about it.
But what was the judge's decision today? Because obviously you, Edanis, and others have been following the case to deport Ravi Ragbir for quite some time.
Yeah, we're very excited. The judge decided that he should be released shortly and released immediately. They have not yet, it's not yet final that he'll stay, but the judge said that there were some rights that were violated, and at least in this country, he has a right to say goodbye. And that portion was very much taken away from him as they tried to take him away in a van with passengers, because when the ambulance came out, it had no lights, had no sirens. That's not an emergency vehicle at that moment in time. That's just a van, and we knew that's what was happening.
Now, Jumaane, I'm sure you faced the critics who have said, hey, look, Ragbir might be a good family man. He's obviously been a leader in the immigrant community. But the reason ICE is shipping him back is that he was indicted and convicted of a felony crime, wire fraud, in 2006 that didn't have to do with an immigration issue. It had to do with white-collar crime, mortgage crimes. Shouldn't that have put him up first in the queue to send back when you commit a felony crime here?
Sure. There are three things here, and I know you're one of the critics. One, the orange man that you call the president said that he was getting rid of, if I'm mistaken, violent criminals, murders, rapists. That crime has nothing to do with it. Two, although it was wire fraud, if you followed the case, he was actually a low-level paper pusher who pushed the paperwork that was sent to him as a lower-level employee in a bigger mortgage company. And so he didn't get additional funds for any of this. He was doing his job and got a salary. Three, which is most important, we have a tendency to try to get a moral high ground by using legal terminology. That has happened throughout our country. We've done a lot of immoral things based on what's the law. The question is, why are we pushing any particular part of the law at any particular time? And no one has yet to explain why we would spend $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to deport someone on this particular crime. It doesn't make anyone safe. Why are we raiding 7-Elevens to get people deported? It has to do more with us trying to make a culture of fear. No one can say that Ravi is a danger to anyone in society. As a matter of fact, he makes this society better. So after serving 2 years in jail, after serving 2 years of house arrest and 2 years in a federal detention center, having been married to an American citizen, having an American citizen daughter, and doing so much good work in this country since almost 2 years ago when this crime occurred, no one can explain why we would spend this much money on this particular case as opposed to directing that money to someplace else that can provide better resources.
All right, but Councilman Jumaane Williams, where do you draw the line amongst the many who are here legally? What crimes would they have committed and violations that would suggest to you no second, no third chance? If they're caught, they got to go through the legal process and then be sent back to their country of origin.
That is an interesting question. And a lot of times we get into dangerous situations when we start dividing people based on the crime. That is a difficult thing to do, because then all you have to do is put some person in that category and take away the humanity. What I would say is that if we're going to say we want to make people safer, then we should look at whether the thing we're doing is actually making people safer. And there's no one that can look at what happened with Ravi Ragbir and say that this is to make the country safer. There's no one that can say the raids on 7-Elevens or to make the country safer. What we can say is, when the president says he doesn't want people coming from S-hole countries, but people coming from Norway, and you look at the black and brown immigrants who are being deported, those things have a connection.
Well, tomorrow, in the gallery, along with other invited guests by congressmen, congresswomen, and senators, the president has invited the mother of one of those who was killed out in Brentwood Central Islip by members of MS-13. Would you acknowledge that if somebody had joined MS-13, either before they came here illegally or joined a gang, MS-13, while here, that if they're caught and they've committed a crime and they've been found guilty in our criminal justice system, they more than anybody else should be sent back, as the president originally described, the bad hombres?
So Ravi Ragbir's wife and possibly Ravi is going to be there as well. What we, again, have a tendency to do is to zero in on individual cases. And I wish nothing but prayers and peace and comfort to that family. But what I would say, when you come back in a bird's eye view, why is there a focus of creating this other? I do believe that everybody should be held accountable for their actions. And I can point out to countless people who are victims of terrorism based on racial bias, and so we can bring so many of those.
Right, but I mean, we know the code of MS-13. They have it tattooed all over their necks, on their forehead. It says, "From prison to the grave, MS-13
yeah,
forever."
You and I have the same thing, and wanted to address crime and violent street crews. Like, I just want to do that. But the question is, when you start to zero that in, the way you're doing it, it allows for many people to be hurt who don't belong there. So that person who committed that violent crime needs to be held accountable. But what we want to do sometimes is lump everybody into one.
And if we look at it, as you suggest, case by case, if they've been found guilty, they're a member of MS-13, they've done their time, and it's time to go back, you would support us deporting them, right?
I don't know that I would be in the street blocking a van, but what I would say is this. Why is there so much focus on that particular case and not having a president focus on something like gun violence?
No, I understand, but you know something, Jumaane, if I were driving that van and you were upset about an MS-13 member going back, I would probably run you over as the driver of that van.
I would say I probably wouldn't be out there, but I would say this. You look at the response that we got for a nonviolent protest, and you will see how people feel about immigrants in general. Even you that made fun of Udonis' accent in the last case shows that this is about painting people as other. And once you do that, there's a lot of dangerous things that come after that.
But
I'm very careful about doing that.
But remember, Jumaane Williams, I did give you and Udonis Rodriguez props. You won an Academy Award in the way you submitted to your arrest. It's clear you're professional agitators and you know about civil disobedience. Hey, look, I got arrested 76 times. I know you got to fold like a cheap camera and appear to be the victim and obviously make the NYPD or any other law enforcement group appear to be just violent predators. Hey, I understand. On Saturday, I was at the corner of 14th Ave and 86th Street in the heart of Dyker Heights. And I remember on that corner there was a place the Lucchese's used to frequent called the 19th Hole because it was right across from the Dyker Heights golf course. And there was a gavone one time outside with a dog. And the dog was barking and barking and scaring the Chinese who were walking by. And the Lucchese's came out and said, "Hey, get that dog out of here." And he said, "Hey, F you guys." And then they took out their toolies and they shot over and over again. Now, I bet you thought they shot the gavone, right? Nah, they shot the dog. And guess what? Nobody in Dyker Heights saw nothing. They didn't see a thing.